You are listening to Right on Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at KFAI.org. I'm Josh Weber, and tonight on Right on Radio, we have a very special one-hour-long episode focusing on Poets and Pints. Poets and Pints happens on the third Wednesday of the month, where anyone can go up on stage and read their poetry at Sisyphus Brewing. In this show, you will hear readings from a Poets and Pints event and my conversation with the curator of Poets and Pints, Tony Placido. He also facilitates a workshop to help poets become better performers of poetry. For information about Tony and Poets and Pints, you can check them out at crackedwalnut.com. All this and more, so stay tuned to Right on Radio. I'm speaking with Tony Placido, a poet, occasional photographer, Cracked Walnut board member, performance committee chair for Cracked Walnut, published author of three books, Sucker Punch Wisdom, Aging, and Other Side Projects, and Felt This So Many Times, and the current curator and host of Poets and Pints. Welcome to Right on Radio, Tony.
And actually, I got four now.
Four? That just get released?
Yeah, in August.
In August.
Gave you a old bio apparently, and I apologize. So The Conflict That Creates is my fourth book.
Okay.
Came out in August.
Was that also published through Spartan Press?
An offshoot called Luchador Press, but yes.
On your website, you say you began writing horrible songs at nine. Eventually that morphed into more of a poetry slant.
I mean, I was, you know, young, and I remember the first song I wrote was called Noises. And my poor mom, I made her hear me sing it once. And the song probably has the word noises 50 or 60 times in it. It's truly awful. And I feel bad for her. But yeah, I thought it was so profound for how old I was, though, just about all the noises I hear everywhere around me. And so I didn't write a lot of poetry. So I started in kindergarten writing poetry. And then it was more like I was just writing songs because I had to walk to work. So singing to myself, basically. And then I really didn't do anything with it until like late junior high, high school. And then I started writing poems again about being a teenager and not getting the women I wanted.
Thank you. I started writing, people ask me what got me writing poetry. And I actually started my senior year in college when the first true love of my life dumped me. No, that was the reason. Poetry has been good to me ever since. But I never wrote about that until this year. I was living in Northwood, St. Olaf, and was living above right above where the Baltimore plant was, and they shot the puffed wheat out of these guns in early in the morning of like 5 stories and fall down to be puffed. And so I spent a lot of time just standing out there in the winter and listening. The winter my first love left me, but did not leave the town we shared. I lived just up the hill from the railroad tracks and the malt mill plant. Midnight to 3 were chosen hours of prayer. The whistle of a long freight heading south with corn or coal. The switchyard, where tomorrow's boxcars were hitched to engines by men with lanterns. The sound of cannons as the puffed wheat or rice was shot from the fifth floor and fell into air as air curled into each kernel. Snow muffled all, and breath was all I spoke. Breath warmed by the blood transporting through my lungs. Some vessels bringing oxygen into flesh, others offering carbon to the part of the sky we overlook. The part that rises a foot or two from our mouths, then disappears. In winter, we can see our breath. In all seasons, we must trust it. Praise rises, but so does grief. One is not ashamed of the other. That winter, snow became my counsel. Tracks heading somewhere, beauty cold, deep, unspeakable, alive. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. Yeah. After your teens, did you stop writing completely?
I did not stop writing. No, I just didn't realize there was something I could do with it. So I would write it. It would just sit in my computer or in my, well, a book until I was actually very late to the computer game. Once then it would just sit in my computer. Once I realized I didn't have to handwrite it anymore, I actually started writing more because the way my thought processes work, I think too fast and sometimes writing was actually hard. I kept writing, but then it wasn't until much later where somebody's like, you know, you can perform those for people. And so then I started open mics and then I really got into it and had a lot more fun and grew as a writer too because of it, because I started hearing a lot more poetry in the world. In my spare time, I enjoy reading, interior design, cooking, singing to my cats, fishing, and hiking. Everybody, please put your hands together for Laura Robinson.
Hi, I'm Laura. I'm going to be reading mostly from my first book, which comes out actually next year, with Akinoka Press. It's a small press based in Baltimore. My book explores the dispossession of body and self during and in the aftermath of trauma, the grief and reconciliation that's born from the separation, and the ultimate return to yourself with the understanding and acceptance that you may come home to a new and different self. And that's pretty groovy. So, we're gonna keep it light. When you are the only light on the highway, I hope you feel my spindle fingers twisted in your curls. Remember spiders on your neck, weaving wicked tapestries, my voice cracking like our pipes in winter. On the coldest nights, count your fingers, tide your breath. Do you remember milk and honey, naked and spread over crimson sheets, frayed nails dredging the base of your back, nicotine stained and brackish, because I could not bear another night drunk and alone. Read my poems, hung on the walls like epitaphs. Board up the windows and doors, build a mausoleum, and visit when you need to remember, a jeweled hummer fluttering on your porch and fading sunsets, fireflies beating on glass and wood. Remember the days you forgot to feed the wilting orchids, how you let them die. This poem's title is also the first line, so we're just gonna dive in. Lost in the back hollow of God's country, you're 10, sitting on a creek bank, holding a pretty bird too closely. Ball your fists when her neck slumps, rattle the carcass, and curse the callous sun glow. You are 20 years removed from gliding metals and taxidermy mantles. A hunting lodge is the family home. Somewhere in the shadows, where all the blue jays are broken and happiness sleeps under your pillow. Come, see the flushing planks and rotting roof. Behold the beauty of the death you wrought. Homeostasis. You have carved your wanting out of what cannot be melted, of what cannot be exchanged. To love is to vacate, to over-engineer. Your silence is a carcass, sun-bleached bones on an empty beach, a rack to be mounted. Murals. Motherless vinegar, you know your history. Machines for suffering, Picasso. Bare knuckle portraits you paint in the bedroom. Tongue bitten, spit drunk and flailing, metallic tannins alive with the novelty of your own violence. She tips the bourbon down the drain, double barreled, melting joints, your own blood shattering hot glass. The loneliness you laid on her pillow, the silky girls who never knew your name, spinal shrapnel scarred over and splintering, years of it swallowing you whole. All the beautiful fires she set in the kitchen, all the ashes of things held closer than you.
On your website, you discuss how what revitalized your interest in poetry was you were invited, I think, by a friend of yours in 2007 to a poetry event. Is that right?
2009 or 10, but it was the poetry filibuster in Kansas City, Missouri. They were trying to break the world record for the longest poetry reading ever. And it was going to go 5.5 days, basically, with nonstop 20-minute sections. And she lived just down the street from the bookstore where it was all happening. And I was like, okay, I'll come. I'll, you know, sleep on your couch and whatever. I'll read a poem in the middle of the night when nobody's there anyway. And, you know, I'll just try to, I'm a night owl anyway. And so for me, this was perfect because I'm a person that could be up at 3 a.m. and be down at a bookstore reading a poem because I'm up anyway. Mm-hmm. And so, but I ended up taking several slots because they were open and I was like, I've just never read before. And after the first time I was just like, this is a lot of fun. And I realized that based on other people telling me that I was actually good at it. And so then I just, I was like, oh, well, once somebody tells me I'm good at something, then I'm going to do it forever.
I kept thinking about this when I attended Poets and Pines, about the kind of allure of having a stage and reading words. And it's like where words are made flesh in a way that doesn't, it can't be really be comparable to other literary arts. What's the interest for you?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that is that it's for me in high school, I was in acting. I was in theater. I was a theater kid. I wasn't in sports. So I was always doing theater.
Yeah.
And I love it, but being an adult in theater is a huge time commitment. Mm-hmm. You've got to go to rehearsal and then you've got to be at all the plays. And it's just something I don't have time for, though I love doing it. So for me, poetry is a way to do sort of these little mini 2-minute plays. And so that's why I also try to help people learn how to perform poetry, because there's so much emotion that goes into things that people write most of the time. And I want people to present that on stage. Too many people, I don't know if they had some English teacher that said, just stand at the podium and read your poem or what, but that's what they do. Yeah. And to me, it's like, if all you're going to do is read out of your book, just hand me the book, because I'll make something out of it while I'm reading it in my head, as opposed to you just standing there reading words, which don't mean anything without emotions. If you're sad, be sad while you're reading it. If you're happy, be happy while you're reading it. So it became a thing.
So my name is Lasasha. I am a funeral celebrant, an advocate, and an artist. And I'm so glad to get on stage and share my poetry whenever I can, because I feel like all those parts of myself get to come together and be witness. So you're probably gonna see a little bit of that funeral celebrancy in there. I talk about death and sex, and I mentioned mangoes a couple times because I love them so much. I have a mango tattoo on my arm. This morning or earlier in the day, a childhood friend of mine passed away, and so I would like to dedicate these poems, or my portion of the show, to Aaron. Icy waters soften over springtime sand. The closing of winter's death ritual collides with birthing time. Like a grandfather's big hand wrapped around his grandbaby's little thumb. This place called to me, where the end meets the beginning. I tried to run, bargain, sparkle, tried to love and pour and love and love and love. Tried to be better, bleed more, bleed less, but death wanted to meet me like warm sand meets the cold water's edge. So I walked into the brush looking for a place to lie down, like a bear slipping into dreamtime. Or maybe like a cat looking for a place to birth. The Aztecs said that a mother who gives her life to her child will go to the same heaven as any warrior who gives his life to defend. The animals hear my sound. My breath deepens as each motion of my hips deepen. I Inhale until I am so full that my bones crack and my grandmother sighs, and for a moment I feel just as wise as she is. Put your blood into the garden, she says. You are as fertile as the soil. Tension turns to thunder and they sing for me, the birds, the bear, the water's edge and the sky. They roar and hum and crack and croon in symphony. I heave. Fire and wind raptures me. Your voice was made to heal you, says grandmother's voice, carried by the wind. So I copy the sounds of my forest king, resurrecting wild from my gut. I heave again, and I remember who I am. Which vines did you pick to dress the wounds? How tightly did you tie them? Which herbs did you put beneath the vines? What phase was the moon in? Did you spread yourself across the earth? Did you bury yourself? Did you bathe in honey? Did you call it a baptism? Did you cry long enough to mistake your voice for your grandmother's? Did you sing long enough to mistake your voice for your grandmother's? Did you braid your hair? Did you shave your head? Did you find your rage? Did you seethe? Did you gather matchsticks and kerosene? Did you spit hot embers from your mouth? Though I stepped into many rooms alone, you had been there burning sage for me before I arrived. Did you feel joyful too after you wept and spread your bones across the floor? And counted them, then gathered them, then stepped out of that room and into the rain, washing salt and ash from your tired face. Oh, show me the shadows within your becoming. How you crawled to the belly of the earth to rest beneath time and bedrock. How you were so certain that you'd find a place to rest so deeply it would touch the wounds of your ancestors. Tell me how sweet the sounds were there, echoing through your chest like caves becoming of your buried ribcage, when each thing you learned to think about yourself fell away, as your skin turned to dirt and you heard your own song. Did it feel like coming home? Thank you, Mason.
Yeah.
Life's full of contradictions. Roses have long time been a symbol of both love and death. But what the hell does death have to do with falling in love? Maybe their likeness lies in the way grief can pull you. In the same way, love will have you feeling like you're falling hopelessly. Where is my beloved? Life's full of irony too, like walking into a death cafe and sitting down to talk about, well, death. When a woman says, I don't really know what I'm doing here. In fact, this feels like a cult, but one time my friend's brother blew his brains out, so we took a piece of his brain and we put it in the freezer. As she looks around nervously, as if death itself may emerge from the walls where we sit in this art gallery, as if art doesn't come from the same place everything we've ever known goes to die. Completely ironic, really. How we come to know the depth of our love at the hour of separation. Grief tears me open. But eventually love rushes back in, richer, more vivid, and fuller than before. La petite mort. That's French for a small death. But you see, we're talking about sex, where breath chases breath, where inhibition breaks, bowing to chaos before chaos bows to calm, seizing, then delivering me each time I burst like a cloud and my wetness waters my lovers like raindrops kissing grass. I am exonerated, liberated of flesh. I am propelled at the speed of light into the deep dark, to a place where not a single atom vibrates. I am surrendered to a small death. My thoughts settled like clinking plates return to the cupboard as the dinner guests wipe the carnage from their faces.
When I'm listening to a poet speak, I want to be lost in what they're saying.
Yeah.
So if this is just a euphoric, over the moon, happy piece, by the time they're done with it, I want to be shouting, yeah, like this is great. I feel great now because you made me feel great. And if it's sad, then the same thing. Like, I want to be like, oh, my heart hurts now. Or I'm so mad at that person also, like I'm with you. And when a person does that, they become one of my favorite poets. And the people that in Kansas City that got me into this whole thing, they were all those poets. When I watched them speak, they were into it. It was a thing that they had rehearsed to the point where it seemed like natural speech. And that's kind of the thing that I preach in my classes, workshops, there's a better term, that every poem has a character. There's no true to life poetry because nobody speaks that way. So when you're on stage presenting this character, be that character. Otherwise, it's a waste of everybody's time, including yours.
Sorry about the delay. I needed to pick so much to choose from. This is a persona poem that was inspired by something I saw driving to work recently. How much humiliation must one dog withstand? First, you move me to a small yard in the suburbs. I'm a hunter. I should be roaming the woods and plains. Then you surround it with an invisible barrier that hurts when I cross it. Second, you remove my testicles. That hurt too. I miss them. At least they don't get zapped when I cross your invisible barrier, that electronic torture device that should be fastened around those small and meaningless testicles that you are so fond of and will never be able to lick. Third, you dress me in costumes, a giant hot dog, a horse being ridden by a monkey, a dragon, a slice of watermelon, a taco, a superhero cat. Not a superhero sidekick, but a cat. No cat can be a superhero or any kind of hero. Fourth, you name me Jasper, the nickname given to you by a friend in grade school. Jasper makes me wonder if he really was a friend. If you were an intelligent animal, if you cared, you'd know I am Shazmo Aloysius Melvin, scourger of cats, harasser of squirrels, chaser of birds, tormentor of sleeping children, conqueror of the sofa, soiler of the carpet, destroyer of all things left lying about, supreme leader of the hairballs residing everywhere in my fortress where you are allowed to live, peasant. It is appropriate you carry my wastes in plastic bags as I parade you around the neighborhood, displaying to all creatures that I have a human. But now for the final humiliation, you put me in a cone, a plastic funnel, to protect me, you say. And I ask, who is protecting me from you? Who is protecting you from me in the middle of the night? And it gets worse. The cone is festooned with butterflies and flowers. I eat butterflies. I piss on flowers just before you put your nose to them. And you make me wear a cone for all dogs and that feline hell spawn next door to see. You believe me to be a happy dog. That is just my face. Beneath it waits the truth. I cannot see to the left or to the right, but I can see you, and your time is coming. If you had a cone on your head, you'd see that. Thank you.
The air is heavy today, like a thick fog that I must wade through. It's a sunny day and warm, but it feels cold and hazy, heavy, like I'm weighed down. My mind won't move. My feet are planted. My eyes have a film, playing, tricking, hiding, dust from the desert, oil from a spill, blocks in concrete. The air is heavy today. So much is happening rather quick, and decisions are being made, and yet no decisions are decided, and nothing is happening at all. It's the journey that ended, and the journey that just began. It's the changing of the guards, a moment of standstill, the moment after a rifle has been shot before the deer has been hit. Heavy, as impalatable, full of feeling, yet full of nothing at all. A container with no boundaries. The air is heavy.
And it's now downpouring outside, so I'm certainly not going to read a poem that I wrote about snow. So this is another persona poem. I was going to read it because Lewis is one of my favorite people, but he's not here, but he writes humorous stuff a lot of times. So this would be what I would read for him. Little preface to it too. There's a commercial about safe driver discount type stuff, you know, and somebody moving really, really slow because they didn't want to risk their discount. So this is called The Goldfish on the Car. I am the goldfish in the fishbowl on the top of that car. You know the one, that insurance commercial, something about safe driver discount. I'm sure you thought, as everyone else did, how did they do that? Sticky tape? Ticky tack? Surely something, right? Once I left my coffee on top of the car, and as I strapped my kid in on the way to school, I started to drive off, and within seconds, the black stream just flowed across my windshield. And now I'm a gold, just a goldfish in a bowl, on the roof of a car. So yeah. Now the thing you should be asking, the thing you should find fascinating, is what it would be like to be me, the fish on the top of the car. Viewing the wider world as it zooms by, all seen through a fishbowl, an actual fish eye lens. Imagine if you were a store-bought fish, and suddenly the whole of your world, stable, predictable, feeding at regular intervals, the same food every day, maybe the occasional weird face peering in, is spun around and around. Quite literally, the world suddenly races by. You are impossibly fastened to the roof of a car, and while it may be moving at only the legal limit, that is far faster than you have ever gone. And centrifugal force will have its way. Multicolored houses, block after block, pass by, cars moving or still seem to zoom past, bright streaks just flashing by like nothing you've ever experienced or seen, literally. Do fish vomit? I'd expect you're about to find out soon. And it's not pretty. Vomit is never pretty. On that, I think all species can agree, especially if you then have to swim in it. And thank God this isn't San Francisco. Thank you.
I think you're really hitting on something here. I was preparing for this yesterday. My roommate was hanging in the background in the living room. He heard me. I was going through your book and I was reading it out loud. And for him, it was funny because he said something I've never really heard anyone say out loud is, I don't really get poetry. What would you tell someone if they said that to you?
Well, I mean, first of all, I'll ask what they mean. Because if they mean they don't understand overwhelming metaphor, Well, neither do I. And honestly, that's not my favorite kind of poetry. And I jokingly, because I don't honestly believe this is true, I jokingly say I write poetry for people who don't like poetry, which isn't entirely true. It's not like I don't use metaphor at all. But I don't think if you pick up my book, on maybe 95% of my poems, I think you'll understand what it's about. And I don't think that makes me better or worse. I'm a type of poet. I'm a type of poet that I like. And so I gravitate towards poets like that, where when you read your stuff, either you make me laugh, you make me cry, you make me mad, whatever. But it's because I understood it. I didn't have to take it back and break it all down and try to realize, oh, that's a metaphor for, you know, the moon or whatever, because I personally don't want to do that. Other people love it. It's their favorite thing. They love to take poetry, reimagine it, try to figure out what the artist meant. And I'm of the school with art in general that whatever the person receiving the art thinks it means is what it means.
Mm-hmm.
I no longer own it. I should get paid for it because I wrote it. But other than that, I no longer own it. It's not mine anymore. It's, you know, if you come up to me and say, I love that poem about your mom, blah, 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 and it was about a dog or whatever, I'll just say, yeah, thank you. I'm glad. You know, I don't tell them, well, that's not about my mom, because it's not important. So.
So I like to usually, like, come prepared to perform, but I read this on my way, or right before I came in. It's started from a prompt with Bill at our last League of Minnesota Poets gathering from a line he just happened to say in passing, which was, stepping on my shoelaces and tripping over myself. And so we made a bet that, you know, like, all right, just to see what we could do with it. And again, this is my second time reading it since I wrote it, so you're gonna have to, if it sucks, well, and you get to make fun of me. That'll be all right. I won't mind. Stepping on my shoelaces, tripping over myself, I look down at my shoes and ask, why the laces? I heard somewhere that hands are for shaking and not tying, which has me wondering. I'm wondering why. And I'm staring at my shoes, as in real life, the world move all around me. And with me in public for all to see, I look the fool. Standing still, staring at my shoes, and tripping over myself. I wouldn't even want to mind it, because you have to fall. You have to fall to pick yourself up for the first time. There's a power in deciding to get up and go, but that decision can only be made from the stillness of the floor. Tripping over myself, I decide while tripping, I'll always love myself, and I'm not sorry for it. Because I know the in myself, and that's how I see it in you, Brother Mir. I acknowledge and salute the divinity within you. I'd simply say namaste, but medias these days have made that word seem kind of cheesy and hokey. I'm over myself now. I only need meditation. And when you is myself, in my heart, in loving life, loving you is a reason to grow for anybody.
I wish I had the words to exemplify the way you would make me feel, letting their delicious melody drip from the tip of my tongue to ink blot smear turned blossoming margin doodles, as I fumble to express how you find ways to quench what I had yet to begin to thirst for. But then, such is the way that time sometimes interrupts itself. I watch a chrysalis outside my window glimmer in the frost, and I cannot remember what butterflies feel like. Or if I could pin down some future dream, I have haven't dared to venture.
And I totally get what you're saying. I was going through your book. What I like about your work, going through, felt this so many times, is really you have a real great power of observation in the moment. There's one that stood out to me that was a bit different from the rest, though. Don't mind if I ask you about distancing the divine.
Sure.
I like this a lot. I mean, to me, it seems like a, I don't know, an ode to from an atheist about their loss of faith, but almost like a, an apology in a way, I guess. Is that fair to?
Well, it is. So there's so many self-righteous atheists in the world.
Yeah.
And for me, I don't like that. Like, I don't care what anybody wants to believe to get them through the day. But for me, this is a poem talking to the people who hammer me with God and my lack of belief, especially considering that I didn't always not believe.
Mm-hmm.
I know that's a weird way to structure a sentence, but I did at some point. But the problem is I learned, this is going to sound snarky and I don't mean it to, it's just how I talk.
Just go for it.
I learned science. And to me, the bigger the universe got and the more it got explained to me, the less that any kind of religion I ever learned made sense because it was so earth-centric. And to me, if God is about this earth and this earth is so screwed up in so many ways and great in so many ways, like I'm not a pessimist. Like I don't think that everything's going to hell and we're done. But if God is the architect, that's what the whole last line was about. Like if you're saying God's a great architect, well, every other architect would be fired for this mess that is around you. Like it can't be good here and bad here. The building will fall down.
If there is a plan in the bland life that I've lived, it's full of falling walls, dead end halls, and countless mistakes to forgive. Any other architect would be fired for that. And that I loved that. Well, even like here to the beginning, you say it's not much to think that life is an accident. For a lot of people are kind of afraid to admit that. And for me, it's okay to see that it's meaningless and I can find meaning in that and not be scared of that.
Yeah.
Hi, everybody. This poem is called The World Before. This is not a hymn. Before the bees were dead, we prayed to a god or gods who might have heard us. We closed mouths around communion wafers, lit candles to saints, or knelt at some altar or another. The hymn to the dead has always been haunting. We loved and fought, held the hands of children, measured time by sun and moon, measured time by leaves and frost, studied the studded cloak of night. We baked bread, marveled at how yeast rises, measured love by gifts and pain by loss. We knew success was not possession. Still, we bought and sold, consumed all we could, sure there would be peace, sure there would be more. We could predict things then. When water would freeze, fish would glide along the underbelly, 6 inches of ice like glass. Birds would migrate in search of heat and light. The bees would hunker down, buzzing like a heart in winter's hive. When the ice would thaw, the chirping would return, first in pockets, then in full sheets of bird. Buzzing would spill out into the air, an explosion of gilded energy. And this was the way of things. There was always plenty. There would always be more. We said our prayers and lit candles. Who knew the sacrifices we were making? Mm.
Running, and it was with the one who actually shared this place with me, encouraged me to go. So I guess I'll dedicate it to her and share that I did this. So it's called Made to Move, Created to Create. Setting out in the morning for a jog, my mind, body, and spirit are as lifted from a fog. Each step releases me from the stagnation of extended sitting, and my senses are overwhelmed as I pay attention to each in its time. I see the classic sight and sound of a bird singing its set tune. We are made to move as a bird, created to create. I hear also the sound of the wind picking up to cool the warming day. We are made to move as the wind, created to create. I smell dark oak mulch set out to the landscape, a set of flower beds. We are made to blossom as the flowers and share seeds of insight, created to create. I taste the saltiness of my drying, thirsty tongue as I continue forward. We are made to be salt, created to create. I feel my heartbeat increasing as my breath quickens and think about how alive this makes me feel in this moment. We are made to move and created to create.
It's gonna take me a second to find this. I hate technology. I really suck at it. Well, since I can't find it, I'll just find this one that showed up here. It's really short. Something I wrote a while ago in 2006. From my first chapter. I like Walt Whitman because he's a fat man. A fat poet. He is steak and potatoes, not sushi and quail eggs. He is Elvis and the Rolling Stones. He is Texas and New York, not Versace and teacups. Walt Whitman is Jack Daniels and apple pie. Walt Whitman is a red Cadillac, soldiers and fat babies. I like Walt Whitman. He is a fat man, a poet. He is Walt Whitman.
So let's talk about Poets and Pines. So
absolutely.
Back this up. So when did you first get involved with Poets and Pines?
Poets and Pints was not developed by me. It was developed by David Bayless and Brett Elizabeth Jenkins. These two local poets, although Brett has moved away since then. But she moved to Indiana. David's still here. They came up with this show where they were at Fair State, I believe, originally. It was before my time and back in 2015. So, and that was in February 2015. So they started it, and then it quickly got moved out of there to Sisyphus, and it's been at Sisyphus for about 6 years. I came in 2016. It was right when they would go over to Sisyphus. So it was around February-ish, and I just came to see the show. Somebody told me about it. I came to see it, and I participated in the open mic. And then David liked what I did, a piece called Argument that's in my first book. And he asked if I wanted to be a feature on the show, because that's basically how this show works. There's no tryout process. You just basically get asked to be on the show. I did. And then just a few months later, I was a full-on feature and had a bunch of fun. And then I started helping David with the show. So I helped him develop an email address, a website, a Facebook group. He was doing all this stuff just by word of mouth, basically, and wasn't really broadcasting it the way it should be. And I was like, this is a great idea for a show, and it's a great venue. Let's make it more popular. So I was helping him. And then eventually in fall of 2018, he came to me. He's like, I'm going to want to stop doing the show, and I want to know if you want to have it. And I was like, absolutely. Yes. I won't even think twice. It sounds great. So we made it so that February of 2019 would be his last show. And then March of 2019 actually technically would be my first show, but the late Michael Finley, who was sick at the time, like a lot of people know this poet, Michael Finley, he was already sick at the time. We didn't know how much time he had left, and he asked if he could curate a show and host a show. And I said, absolutely. I don't even care that it's supposed to be my first show. You're a legend. Please do it. And so my first show was actually in April of 2019, where I was the host and curator. Been going ever since. And then one of the first things I did was talk to Crack Walnut, which is a local chapter of the League of Minnesota Poets, and see if we could get a tie-in with them and become part of them, so that I just wanted it to have more of a credence and more of a nonprofit feel. Wanted people to know that we're not here trying to make money off these poets. We also don't give money to the poets, but we don't make money off them either. We're here for poetry, and we're here for performance, and We want everybody to feel welcome and to maybe have interest in the League of Minnesota Poets. And so that's how I became part of it. And then I joined the board, and then I became the performance chair. So now Cracked Walnut performances, I don't want to say they feed through me, because anybody who wants to create one, they really just have to talk to the Cracked Walnut team and say, this is what we want to do. Do you think it's part of your brand? And usually, unless it's some crazy thing, we're like, yeah, absolutely. And it just, I kind of make sure that anybody who needs anything in the performance world can get it, basically.
The venue for Poets and Pines, is it mostly just located at Sisyphus? Do you guys rotate it all different? Okay,
Sisyphus. No, it's solely at Sisyphus. Sisyphus has been wonderful to us. I will shout their name to the heavens for all time, because they are very, very cool. I mean, obviously they closed for the pandemic, so I kept the show going via Zoom from April of 20 through July of 21. So all those shows are on our Poets and Pints YouTube channel. So I started a YouTube channel then. And now I've just been filming the show on my computer during the show too. So now the YouTube channel has continued on. All the shows, even the live ones now, have been on our YouTube channel. And seriously, if you just search Poets and Pints, you'll find the YouTube channel. So giving the link, great, but you won't miss it. It's got a big ampersand. You'll find it.
One thing I liked when I went to see the performances, it was the staple of people that did actually perform that night. You had a broad range of people who were in their 60s or 70s talking about pets, to young people in their 20s going over a breakdown of a relationship. And I was wondering, how do you decide what your cast of people who are going to be performing that night is like? How do you do it?
So what I do is, if I know you're a poet and I know you haven't been on the show, I'll ask you to fill out a survey. The survey takes approximately 1 minute to fill out. It's not a big survey. It simply tells me you're interested. And then I just try to put together a show. There's never I shouldn't say never. When I'm putting together the show, there's very rarely a theme. It's usually just, I want to make sure that there's a diverse dais on stage. So I try to make sure that there's at least one person of color. I'll have a whole stage full if I could. Honestly, I just don't have them in the quote unquote hopper. And I'm putting out feelers. So if you're a person of color and you want to be on a poetry show and you've never been on Poets and Pints, please reach out to me, because we desperately want to have a diverse show. And for example, this month in February, we're having all people of color. It's a Black History Month show. I didn't put it together. Joe Davis put it together. The Black Pearl Warren is the host, and I'm just going to be there, an audience member. But and so that's another thing we do, is these guest curated shows. So that keeps me from having to plan 12 shows a year, which I would go insane. So I usually end up having to do about 6 shows a year, which is perfect. And, you know, and I love the summer shows, so I typically do those. They're just a little more fun. More people come out. But yeah, there's no tryout process. We don't have a gatekeeper, which is a complaint that people have a lot about citywide poetry shows. If you go to any given city, there's a lot of gatekeepers out there, and I really try not to play one. I try to, if you give me a survey, I'll get you on the show.
Is there a lot of people, after they do it, do they stick around?
Not as much as they should.
Really?
I constantly tell people, you know, like, thank you for being on the show. Please don't let this be the only show you come to. Like, I'm glad you were here. I'm glad you performed your work. Please come back. Please bring people. We're here every month. And it doesn't work as well as it should. I personally, and I don't want to make this sound like a guilt trip, because I'm not trying to. For me, I felt guilt and I just kept coming, because it's like, he had me on stage. Like, if I don't show up, I feel bad. And I think that's just a difference in how I was quote unquote raised in the poetry world, and raised just started in that Kansas City place. But there, like, you go to each other's stuff. Like, if I come to your stuff, you come to my stuff, and that's how we keep this going. And so it's not always as full as I want, but since I got Cracked Walnut, League of Minnesota Poets, it's had a bigger crowd more often. And also because we plan so far out in advance now, we get to advertise. And then we always do something special for Black History Month and for the National Poetry Month in April. This month, we're having all poetry teachers on, who will be doing their work as well as some of their students. So it's going to be an interesting show.
When's the show happening?
That's actually on April 20th.
April 20th. Okay. What's happening this month?
This month is the Black History Month. So that's on February 16th. And Joe, like I said, Joe Davis, who's a local person of color poet, he put together the show. He curated the whole thing. He's not actually going to be there because he had another gig, which is fine. So the Black Pearl Warren is another local poet. She's going to host. And then we got Jessica Winnie, Shavonda Brown, and Christine Free. So female poets, all people of color. And they're doing the show. And I'll just be an audience member. And that's what we've been doing for Black History Month since I took over the show.
Hi.
And I have a philosophy that I understand that we are all in Minnesota, and so humility is like this thing, but I think it's stupid when it comes to art. There is no reason to be humble in art. Like, if you're an artist, tout your shit. Tell everybody you're awesome. It's that simple. All right. So this poem's called A Small Amount of Humility. Starts with a quote. True humility is not thinking less of yourself. It's thinking of yourself less, by C.S. Lewis. The clock is ticking. The noise should be constant. It should hit the beat every time, but it's tick, tick, tick. Then it's tick, tick. Tick, and suddenly your heartbeat no longer lines up. You feel as though you're dying by the second or the half second. It really depends on when that tick happens. But feeling death or thoughts of dying is what we do after 40. We balance whether or not this cheeseburger is worth the extra 30 minutes it's taking. It is, by the way. In my last 30 minutes, I'll be remembering all the cheeseburgers and forgotten meals consumed in front of the television. But people in life encourage humility. They tell you, be humble in sports, for it's only a game. They tell you, be humble to your family, for they're the ones who will love you whether or not you ever improve. And they tell you, be humble before God, because, no, I'm not really sure. And also that. When I die, I want people to be so shocked that they shut down like a soldier who developed PTSD as a child. When I die, I want there to be a service so grand that people wish they could have had an invite. When I die, I want it to create a hole so big that physics can't fill it. I want everything I've ever written to be read again to children, even the words, because you can only trust people who curse. I want my stuff to have a presence on eBay, and I want a fireworks ceremony so I can scare the shit out of my cats one last time. I want to be the character that everyone is pissed is gone next season. I want a memorial bench so now I can support. I know I haven't always. Look. When all we're given is this murderous teacher named Time, when all we have is what we leave behind, it shouldn't surprise you that I want some immortality as much as I can get. Who's selling it? Where can I buy it? You want to be loved in life, but I want to be loved eternally. I want you to remember me smiling and then laughing so hard that I make zero noise. And I want you to remember how blue my eyes were when the sun finally came out. And I want that clock to hit the seconds like it's supposed to every single time. My heart does not like the spaces.
For any upcoming wannabe poets out there who want to be involved with Poets and Pines, where can they reach out to do the survey for you if they want to be involved?
Well, there's a Facebook group for Poets and Pints. So if you look up Poets and Pints on Facebook, I know not everybody's on Facebook anymore, but the survey's there. But also you can just put a message on there. Hey, can somebody give me the link for the survey? But if you scroll down far enough, you'll find it. Also, the Cracked Walnut website has it under the Poets and Pints section. So crackedwalnut.com. Also, poetsandpints.com will go to the Cracked Walnut website now. So we've just routed it. So it used to be a separate website. Now it's the same. So there's lots of different places. Or if you just know me or know somebody who knows me, I can get it sent to you. We've got plenty of openings for the rest of the year. So we're planned out through April-ish. And unless you're a poetry teacher, then get a hold of me about April. But otherwise, we're planned out through April. And then, you know, plenty of time for the rest of the year.
This is my time to talk with Tony Placido, the showrunner for Poets and Pints. Tony, thanks so much for being on Right on Radio.
Thank you for having me. It's been great.
And now this.
You are listening to Right on Radio on KFAI 90.3 FM and streaming live on the web at kfai.org. I'm Annie Harview. I'd like to thank our special guest tonight, Tony Placido, and all the poets involved with Poets and Pints, and our listeners. Without your support and donations, KFAI would not be possible. You can find more news and info about Right on Radio at kfai.org/rightonradio. Plus, you can listen to recent episodes and old on our podcast. You can search Right on Radio on Spotify, iTunes, Google Podcasts, anywhere podcasts can be found. Stay tuned here on KFAI for Bonjour, Minnesota.